Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the ride.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new president. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, no matter where you may be listening to us. It's your boy Sirius, and your man got the keys to the kingdom now. You know what I'm saying? My man Barry Zellner is sitting at home right now watching the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. So he called your man and was like, yo, hey, I'm going to need you to take over. Say less, my guy. I got it. With that being said, man, I'm such a privilege to be here with you guys running the NFL free-for-all show. This is the week four edition. But I don't do this by myself, man. We are a wild network here, man. And I was able to pull one of the cats in from off the mountain somewhere, man. Y'all know him as James Greenwood, but I know him as Mr. Controversy. Man, James, what's going on, man? Say what's up to the people this evening.
Hey, man, I'm always down to talk a little football here with the chefs. So I climbed down from the mountaintop, and I have seen that it is good. Week five is on its way, but a little talk of week four before we get into that.
Most definitely, man. Before we get cracking the calling number, it is 929-477-2759. If anybody wanted to pop on and kick it with us for the next 90 minutes or so, again, as my man TP said, you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with the chefs, and we definitely appreciate it. But before we even get cracking, I did want to talk to you a little bit, Greenwood, about this current Urban Meyer situation. For those of you guys who have kind of been under a rock for the last 24 to 48 hours, Urban Meyer was caught on video at a little club or whatnot, you know, catching some lap action from a female. So it's gone viral, and looks like that the Jacksonville Jaguars got a couple of things to deal with. He's has since apologized to the organization and the team. He said that he had to earn their trust back. And honestly, the verbiage and the wording in his contract is though, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars could very well avoid his contract and fire the guy. But, James, I kind of want to get your opinion on it real quick. What do you think about this whole Urban Meyer thing before we start talking about these games this week?
I mean, he should be apologizing more for being a terrible coach. This might be the greatest gift that he's given the Jacksonville Jaguars to get out of his contract and give Trevor Lawrence an actual football coach to coach him, because he's bad. He's just really, really bad. And the Jags should just, like, use this as an excuse to get rid of him. And then he can go back to college, you know, small program, work him up, you know, do the disgraced football coach thing and move on. I mean, I'm not really outraged by the videos at all. I mean, you do what you do, you know. But I mean, as far as what's best with the Jacksonville Jaguars, blessing in disguise is what I say.
You know, man, it's kind of funny you mentioned that because, you know, I did watch the video and everything that did circulating throughout the internet. And, you know, he was sitting there at the bar and some girl was doing her thing or whatever. I didn't necessarily see him put his hands on her or, you know, grab, you know, at his person or anything like that and make it, you know, obscene and a lewd gesture or anything like that. However, you do, as the head coach of an organization such as that, not put yourself in that type of a position. With that being said, it looks like the Jaguars and the fans are really searching for every reason they can to kind of get rid of this guy. You know, he is, you know, it does appear to be like he's over his head. And here's the thing. It's no news. We, you know, we all kind of seen this coming. We looked at the situation for what it was. You know, Urban Meyer wanted to get back into coaching. The Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, were on his top list of destinations. And we sat here on this very network and was like, yo, this is not going to end well. You know, he is not going to end well. So I didn't think they would try to jettison him out of the league like this. I figured he would have left on his own accord and his own volition. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And honestly, this does not look good for Urban Meyer at all. I think he's married. I mean, I'm not too sure, but I think he's married or something like that. And, you know, has a wife and a family and some kids. So this is definitely not a good look for not only himself as a professional, but this is a stain to he and his family as they try to put the pieces back together. Moving on from that, I did want to do things a little differently here at Greenwood. I wanted to talk biggest surprise and biggest letdowns as we now turn the page to October. The first quarter of the season is done and in the books. And so I wanted to take do the good side first. If you could pick three players that have surprised you in the first four games of the season, who would they be?
The first one would be Cordarrelle Patterson. Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, you thought was a washed-up return guy, and now he's, like, fighting – like Mike Davis for the number one running back position. He's all over the field. He's only getting like 25 to 30% of the touches, but he's making every single one of those touches count. And he's gonna mess around and like take that starting spot, get moved around the field and become a staple into this Atlanta Falcons offense. So he would be like the biggest, big surprise. Mac Jones was also a really big surprise to me because I was one of those guys who thought that Mac Jones was just the guy that everybody wanted to be Tom Brady but never really was. And, I mean, he showed a lot of guts and gumption in that Tampa Bay Buccaneers game and has low-key been probably, as far as performance-wise, thus far in the first quarter of the season, the best rookie quarterback right now. That's over Trevor Lawrence, who everybody thought was the best prospect since Andrew Luck. Better than Justin Fields, who everybody thought should have been taken ahead of him. And I know that means Trey Lance hasn't really gotten a chance to hit the field yet, so that could change over time. But and then obviously Davis Mills, who nobody thought was going to be good on the Houston Texans, but still, Mac Jones is definitely a guy that really surprised me coming out of the gate out of Alabama for the New England Patriots. To even just to take the job from Cam Newton was impressive in its own right. As far as the last guy in this lot, I mean, kind of figured that Kyler Murray was going to be good, But I didn't really expect him to be this good. Like, it's not just getting better acquainted with DeAndre Hopkins. He's spreading the ball all around the field to a guy who I previously called a washed-up A.J. Green has found new life in this Arizona Cardinals offense. And even the second, third, and fourth reads are all getting looks from Kyler Murray, which is kind of impressive for a young quarterback to step into his own in the league like that.
You know, honestly, Kyler Murray, you know, obviously is doing his thing, potential MVP candidate. I'm sure we'll talk about that either later on today or in other shows. But for me, sticking with your quarterback theme a little bit, I'm going to go kind of unconventional, and I'm going to go Sam Darnold. And the thing with Sam Darnold is, you know, yeah, they lost to the Cowboys this past weekend, but he's been playing exceptional football. Right now is kind of leading the league in the leading running backs in touchdowns. He's a quarterback, and he has more rushing touchdowns than Derrick Henry and Ezekiel Elliott and company. Which makes me angry because I got Christian McCaffrey on my fantasy team, and I went and handcuffed him with Chuba Hubbard, and he's stealing Chuba Hubbard touchdowns, but you know what, it is what it is. But, you know, besides, you know, running with the football, he's throwing some accurate balls, and, you know, perhaps, you know, a change of scenery is what needed, you know, for him to kind of get his mind right and start playing some winning football. The next guy on my list that I'm kind of, you know, I don't say shocked or encouraged by, is Scary Terry McLaurin out here in Washington. I think that he is playing exceptional football right now. He's one of these guys that really goes under the radar because he's not flashy. He doesn't give you the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram posts all the time. He just goes out there and does his work, and primarily he does his work with no-namers. Or who's who playing quarterback. I mean, this was supposed to be the year he was supposed to get Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they were supposed to go make beautiful music together. Fitzpatrick gets, you know, doesn't make it out of week one, you know, and you got Taylor Heineke out there just running around throwing dimes and doing different stuff. So with that being said, it's quite interesting, and I tip my cap to Terry McLaurin. The last guy on my list, I'm not going to go offense. I'm actually going to go on the defensive side of the ball. And honestly, Diggs is killing it right now, the defensive back for the Dallas Cowboys. And in my honest opinion, he's a guy that is really coming to his own a little bit. He solidified a problem area on that corner position. You know, when you think about the Dallas Cowboys, the number one problem that always comes to people's mind is not necessarily their offense, but it's their defense and their ability to lock people up and stop, you know, balls from going over the top of people's heads. And so for him to come into this particular year and play exceptional football is definitely something that I'm keeping an eye on, and I'm impressed. So if those were your guys, Greenwood, that you were encouraged by, who's kind of been, you know, coming up short or kind of been stinking up the joint for you as we look back a little bit on the first 4 weeks of the NFL season?
The biggest one for me, and it's not exactly an individual player, but an entire squad, the Washington football team defense has been absolutely atrocious. Yeah, it turns out that they ended up 2-2, but it wasn't off the back of this defense, who I think currently, depending on where your rankings lie, is in the bottom five in the league in any major statistical category. Chase Young hasn't gotten a sack yet all season long, going into his second year, so this is not the Washington football team defense that I thought we were going to see coming off the back of last year, where they were a top five defense in the league. They just have been completely laying eggs as far as the entire defensive side of the ball is concerned. Another guy that really has been disappointing is A.J. Brown from the Tennessee Titans. The hype at the beginning of the season was Julio Jones was coming in, so that was going to open things up for A.J. Brown, give him a few more single coverages, and all of a sudden this is going to be his big breakout year, but that hasn't happened either. So, and yeah, he was injured last week in week 4, but it's not like he had any production in weeks 3, 2, or 1 to necessitate season hype. And on top of that, my third guy would probably be I don't think I really have a third guy off the top of my head that I can really point to and say, wow, that guy has – I mean, injuries are one thing, and you can't really call those disappointments. Those are just parts of football. But everybody else I can really think of has had disappointing games, but as far as disappointing beginnings of the year, I can't really think of an individual who's – really been messing up like those two.
Okay, so for the sake of keeping it, you know, fair and honest, I'm gonna leave my squad out of it because I can really just name my whole squad. You know, but for the sake of keeping it a buck, I'm gonna leave that alone for now. The number one team for me that I am disappointed in, and this could be for a plethora of different reasons, is Indianapolis Colts. This was a team for me that I honestly picked to play significantly better than the way they played. Once again, Carson Wentz is made of paper mache. He can't stay healthy. And I think that's going to be an issue for them, you know, going forward as they try to right the ship or whatever and get through this NFL season. The next team that is kind of questionable for me and is giving me a bunch of issues, and even though they won this past week, are the Kansas City Chiefs. And the reason why I say the Kansas City Chiefs is because I said this on the show last week with Barry, but their defense is horrible. And they are looking at outscoring people to win games. And that's all well and good when it's sunny and 75 outside. But when that weather starts to turn, I mean, we are in October here. When that weather starts to turn, you're going to have to play some solid defense. And unfortunately, the Kansas City Chiefs are near the bottom in the defensive category. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is nice, and they activated Josh Gordon today, and he's scheduled to play this upcoming Sunday night against the Buffalo Bills. But ultimately, for me, that defense is going to be a problem because, again, me and TP disagree on it, but Josh Gordon doesn't make a tackle. He doesn't cover a receiver. He's not blitzing off a corner, so it doesn't really matter how many points you score. Can you stop somebody? And unfortunately, I'm not too sure they're going to be able to when it matters the most. If I was going to pick a third team that's kind of disappointing to me, goodness gracious. I'm going to go ahead and side with you and say the Washington football team for the several reasons that you laid out. That defense is not playing well. It was supposed to be a strength to their team, but it turns out to be a weakness. You're putting a lot of pressure and onus on the shoulders of Taylor Heineke and that offense. And you play a first place schedule this year because you won your division. You got a very, very ticked off New Orleans Saints team that you got to play next week, and then, you know, the rest of your schedule gets very, very difficult and very, very hard from there. So if this defense doesn't get it together, you got very, very fortunate, in my opinion, to win a game versus the Atlanta Falcons team who has hasn't held on to a lead since they lost in the Super Bowl to Tom Brady. So, again, you win and you try to do what you can do and, you know, play who's in front of you, but ultimately this Washington football team is to get it together defensively or they're going to be in significant trouble. With that being said, Greenwood, I did want to start talking about the week that was. I was very, 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 very fortunate enough to get these picks in for Villain and the Sunday brunch. So I wanted to kind of go over a couple of these picks with you and kind of talk about where your head was at as you were one of the ones that, you know, were contributing. The first game I wanted to talk about that you picked was this Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears game. Everybody picked the Lions but C.P. Thomas. Like, he didn't have no faith in his boys. What were you thinking by picking the Detroit Lions? Did you see something that you, you know, thought they could exploit? Did you not trust the Bears? What kind of went into your reasoning for picking the Detroit Lions, who ended up coming up short 24-14 to the Chicago Bears?
So the biggest thing for me when I was looking at one team was trending upward and the other team was turning downward. The Chicago Bears were a team that was in disarray, was having problems in the coaching staff, having some flux in the quarterback position. They couldn't figure it out on defense. And don't get me wrong, the Detroit Lions weren't figuring it out either, but they've been playing up to their competition as opposed to playing down to their competition. And that was kind of the biggest thing for me. A heartbreaking loss against the Baltimore Ravens, who are a well above average squad. I would even call them arguably top 10 squad in the NFL. And the Chicago Bears were taking the previous 3 weeks just barely keeping it close. And plus, new quarterbacks tend to struggle in their first couple of games. That was the reasoning behind it. But it looks like Justin Fields is starting to come into his own. He found Darryl Mooney, who was able to run around pretty much unabated for like 125 yards or so. So they found a formula that worked. But before Bears fans start to think that they're finally starting to right the ship, this was the Detroit Lions. So it's not as though it's not as though this was, you know, a team that they wouldn't be expected to beat regularly.
Right, right. You know, it's funny you mentioned the trending thing because for me, I also picked the Detroit Lions to win this ball game for much of the same reasons that you laid out. You know, it's not like we talked about it and kind of collabed on it. I just honestly felt that the Detroit Lions were the best of the bad bunch, if you will, between these two teams. I really felt as though they showed really well versus Green Bay. They lost a heartbreaker to the Baltimore Ravens. And with the whole, I'm not sure who my quarterback is, that Matt Nagy was going through, the absence of Allen Robinson, who is still lost somewhere. We have no idea where he's at. And everything that was going on, I just honestly felt like the Detroit Lions, if there was going to be a game that they could luck box their way into a win, that would be it. Unfortunately, the odd part about it is that the Lions fan was like, nah, I'm not buying that. And T.P. Thomas, who went with the Bears. The next game I wanted to talk to you about, you were the only one that picked the Carolina Panthers to beat Dallas in Dallas. The rest of us kind of ran with the Cowboys. Same type of question for you, my guy. What were you thinking? Were you doing the same kind of thing with the trending sort of output? Did you think that Sam Darnold can go on the road and get it done in that type of environment? Or are you just, you know, what were you thinking when you made the pick?
When I take the Carolina Panthers, it was entirely off the back of this defense. I mean, this was a defense that was holding opponents to 43 yards rushing, and this was a team that has a good portion of their offense still focused around that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott. Yes, Dak Prescott can carry the team if he needs to, but I thought that that defense could hold together. I really wasn't thinking about the injuries in the secondary that obviously in this game definitely held some sort of prominence in it. But at the end of the day, the defense is what was selling me on it and how this was I think statistically a top five defense going up against a prolific offense. It was strength versus strength and weakness versus weakness. And this time, and I guess at this point in the league, the offense is going to win those battles over defense. So I'll have to start rethinking my picking strategies in those instances.
You know, it's weird you mentioned that because for me, my whole thought process was this. Like, the Dallas Cowboys could very well be still undefeated, in my opinion. I really felt as though they outplayed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week one, and they are winning ball games at different ways. They're finding ways to win ball games. The week two went against the Chargers. They just grounded and pounded it and kind of literally just made it ugly, made it messy. Week three, so to speak, they kind of opened it up a little bit and played some significant ball. Then the week before that, they played the Eagles and they just opened up a can on prime time Monday Night Football. So for me, it was like, okay, so they're at home. They're a very difficult team to beat at home. I have a man crush, if you will, on Micah Parsons based off the fact that he went to Penn State. I'm a Penn State fan, and he's playing some significant ball. I'm a Dak Prescott fan. I like what he stands for. I like watching him play. Obviously, we know the story of what he went through and what he had to overcome and even to get to this point. And for me, it was just something that I just really felt as though they would be able to win it at home. Now, had this game been on the road, I may have picked the Carolina Panthers, and had the Carolina Panthers had Christian McCaffrey, that definitely would have went into my thinking process. The next one I wanted to talk to you about, Greenwood, once again, we are on opposite side. No, we're on the same side here. Was the Indianapolis Colts and the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins get that win there. So, the Miami Dolphins lose there. My apologies. Miami loses 27-17. We both picked the Miami Dolphins. I think the only one that picked the Colts was, you know, the villain. He, you know, that one on us, that lucky guy. So he ended up picking the Indianapolis Colts. We can bypass that one for a minute. We were both on the Vikings, and they ended up, you know, dropping to the Browns. I'm going to pause there. What did you see in that ball game that kind of caught your eye? Not necessarily the reason for your pick, but that game was very, very, very messy, if you will. It was 14-7. You know, it looks like, you know, the Minnesota Vikings were able to move the ball, but they, you know, struggled on converting on fourth downs. They had a couple of questionable referee interference calls and things of that nature. Cleveland really couldn't get the ball rolling. Baker Mayfield morphed into retro Baker Mayfield. He's still missing Odell. I'm not sure if you caught a glimpse of this game, and if you did, what were your thoughts as you were watching it?
So I did catch some of this game. Obviously, Red Zone Channel catches all of it. So I was able to catch bits and pieces. But the one thing that I did notice is Baker didn't look good, and it kind of solidified my opinion on Baker Mayfield that I've been on for years, that the Cleveland Browns are not going to win with Baker Mayfield as their quarterback, and he's probably bottom 10 quarterbacks in the league currently. And it might even be lower than that. He might even hit bottom 5 by the end of the year if some of these young rookie quarterbacks start to step up and actually play well. It wasn't only a quarterback issue. There was definitely other factors involved, but that was kind of a big one because he was overthrowing his wide receivers pretty consistently, and it was really questionable as to what it was he was actually throwing at. And on the defensive side, both teams were playing pretty stout defensively. But this happened quite a few times in week 4 where they were in fourth down situations early in the game and they went for it. And that, I mean, yeah, the statistics are that at 4th and 1, you're probably going to make the first down, but you don't do that. You don't risk the field position that early in the game because you may never get it back. And that's always been, you know, kind of football 101. It's all about positioning. So you do the pooch kick, you know, try to slam them back out to the 1 yard line and maintain field position. And a lot of teams made that decision to not do that in quite a few of these games. So, Justin Jefferson ended up showing why he is the future and why they weren't able to get rid of Stephon Diggs, because he's been lighting up the scoreboard at almost every single week and making the catches whenever he's getting the ball thrown to him. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't enough because of some bad game management, I would say. I think these are coaching mistakes more than player mistakes at the end of the day for the Minnesota Vikings.
You know, I mean, I can agree a little bit with you, and I can disagree a little bit with you. For me, I think this game really came down to play calling. And I think that at times Zimmer and Kirk Cousins and those guys got really, really too cute, especially when you should have been taking some points. I honestly think that, you know, even though you can go for 4th and 2, you know, if you don't convert there, you're always going to be chasing. It's the same adage for me with the 2-point conversions. You know, if you're always going for the 2-point conversions, it's great when you make them, but if you miss them, you're chasing. Like, if somebody scores a touchdown, kicks an extra point, you lose. You know, so for me, I just think that it's always smarter to take the points there, unless you're in a situation where you can, you know, kind of double dip, you know, like before half, or obviously you're trailing in the ball game. So for me, that's what I thought about the Minnesota Vikings. With the Cleveland Browns, again, they do what they do, and they do what they do well. You know, they run that rock right, they run it left, they bring in Kareem Hunt, and he is 1A in that backfield, and it doesn't matter who's in that backfield, they're going to run that rock, and they just play to their strengths, so to their credit. I would be remiss if I didn't speak on the overtime games, both of them involving New York, New Jersey. Both teams got a much-needed win this past week. So I'm not sure if you wanted to talk about the Jets first or the Giants. But looking at how it was picked, we all picked the Saints. Instead of Villain, Villain played with his heart, and he picked his boys, and he came up correct. But for me, my thinking behind picking the Saints was multiple layered. For one, they were at home for the first time in a significant amount of time due to hurricanes and things of that nature, keeping them away from the building. I do believe, you know, Jameis Winston, even though this was his turn to be bad, Jameis, I figured it was good enough. I didn't see enough out of the receiving corps. As a matter of fact, the New York Giants had a plethora of receivers down. I didn't know if they would be able to run the football, being as though the Saints have a pretty stout run defense. And they managed to not only win, but they came back from a deficit to win. So I was very, 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 very impressed with that. For me, the Saints, I'm not too sure what to make of the Saints right now. As I said previously, it's good Jameis versus bad Jameis, and it literally flips off every other game. This was a game, in my opinion, that I was confused as to why they really wasn't using Alvin Kamara like I thought they could have. You know, Alvin Kamara, we all understand his skill set and what he brings to a table. But for me, I didn't think they used him to best of their ability when you start looking at how this game unfolded. So for me, you went away from using him. You stopped using him. I mean, again, he had 120 yards, but when it came down to crunch time, you stopped using him. We did see a Marcus Callaway sighting finally. He was able to kind of start doing some work. He caught, you know, two touchdowns or whatever the case may be. But if you have Alvin Kamara, you know, I think honestly, in order to alleviate bad Jameis, and he's, you know, stick the ball in his gut, let him go to work. But what were your feelings on watching this game or what you thought about this game as it unfolded as New York Football Giants finally get their first one?
So the big thing that really stuck out to me is Saquon's back. Saquon looked like old Saquon, not just returning from injury Saquon Barkley. So until, you know, God forbid if he gets injured again, but until that point, we're going to start seeing the running game for New York start to blossom again. The statistic for the game for me, Alvin Kamara had zero targets in the passing game. Zero. When you have a talent like that and a running back who is that deadly in the passing game, it is inexcusable to give him zero targets. Even if it's a running back screen, just to get him out into space and have him start running with it. How do you let Alvin Kamara have zero targets, especially when Michael Thomas isn't on the field? It's inexcusable. And you hit the nail on the head. Good Jameis versus bad Jameis. Some weeks the LASIK just doesn't work nearly as well as others, I guess. I don't know. I mean, some weeks they are dueling with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, and other weeks they lose to Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. Now, obviously, that's a little unfair framing, but it's not that much of an unfair framing. You don't know what you're going to get from the New Orleans Saints on any given. They can beat anybody in the league, and they can lose to anybody in the league. That's how the New Orleans Saints feel right now. I don't think this is the beginning of a trend for the New York Giants. They got a good win. They should feel good about it, but I don't think this is the beginning of the turnaround for their season. I don't see that right now. Maybe in a couple of weeks I'll be eating my words, but I just don't see that for the New York Giants, personally.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the turnaround and all that for the New York Giants, because we were sitting here a couple weeks ago, and my man, you know, Villain went down the New York Giants schedule, and he was like, I don't see a win. I don't see a win, especially after they lost to the Atlanta Falcons. He was like, I don't see a win. I don't see a win. And so It's pretty nice for them to pick up a win there and move on. We got about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to popcorn a couple of these other ones real quick. The other game I wanted to definitely talk to you about slightly, unfortunately, was the, let's see, let's go Seattle-San Fran in the 4 o'clock slot. Let me scroll through the picks here and see who picked what. I know I picked San Fran to win that ball game. I was incorrect. And you also picked the 49ers. T.P. Thomas was the only one that ended up picking the Seahawks. So what were your thoughts by picking San Fran, who ended up falling 28-21 to Seattle Seahawks here?
So the thought process for me behind that pick was ultimately the San Francisco 49ers were and still are a better football team. And they still are. It was a good win. It was a lucky win for the Seattle Seahawks, but let's not get this twisted. I think that 8 times out of 10, we probably see the San Francisco 49ers win this football game. It was close. It was a tough divisional game. But really, Russell Wilson stood on his head to win this football game. And every once in a while when you have a great quarterback like that, and Russell Wilson is a great quarterback, you're going to find that sometimes they can pull an inferior talented team to a victory. And that's what happened in this game. But I pick them because the defense is better, the run game is better in spite of everything. And the only thing that Seattle really has going for it is its wide receiver core and quarterback. And that's it. Like, everything else shades towards San Francisco 49ers across the board.
You know, but it's funny you mentioned the wide receiver. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the wide receiver and quarterback, because if you kind of look at how last week was trending, Russell Wilson may have been without one of both of his wide receivers. And according to what I'm looking at right now, DK Metcalf played, and he was able to be effective in the ball game for the Seattle Seahawks. You know, for me, it came down to a couple of things, which is why I picked San Fran. I felt as though, like you alluded to, their defense would be able to come up and do something a little bit. I didn't think that, you know, Russell Wilson would be able to control and maneuver the game like he did. I mean, arguably, he didn't have a big passing day, only threw for .149, but those two touchdowns were timely. He also ran for a touchdown, so he accounted for 3 touchdowns in the ball game. Excuse me. So I honestly just thought that at the end of the day, they would be able to do something. Another big story that we need to kind of monitor, obviously, will be the health of Jimmy Garoppolo. Trey Lance had to come into the ball game due to Jimmy Garoppolo going down. We'll see how that has to that materializes throughout the rest of this week as you start to turn the page to week number 5. The next game I wanted to talk to you about, Greenwood, was obviously the big one that happened, you know, Tom Brady's return to Gillette Stadium to play a very game New England Patriots ball club. For me, I don't want to necessarily say it lived up to the hype, but essentially it lived up to the hype. This was a very closely contested ball game. This was a game that I honestly felt that I wanted, needed Tom Brady to kind of flex a little bit and show his muscle, you know, by dropping 4 touchdowns and, you know, Tampa Bay offense could run around and click or whatever the case may be. But for me, I didn't necessarily say that. you know, this is, you know, that's a testament to Bill Belichick and the Patriots, according to what we listened to and learned after the game. They had a conversation, and, you know, Tom Brady said he understands now why this is a very difficult place to play now. For me, that could be gamesmanship. I mean, the weather kind of did play a factor, in my opinion, as it was rainy and wet and everything like that. But what were your thoughts watching the Sunday night matchup this past week, you know, watching Tom Brady return and get a 2-point dub over his former ball club in the New England Patriots?
So that, I mean, that was a really interesting game from the kind of cat and mouse perspective. We saw Tom Brady sail a lot of passes. Like, he, oddly enough, he looked a lot like Baker Mayfield in his game against the Vikings. Not nearly that bad, but as close as Tom Brady will ever get to looking like that. But the story wasn't really Tom Brady for me. It was Mac Jones. Mac Jones played very, very, very well. He was hitting his guys. He was hitting his targets. He was looking off defenders. He was making the right throws and completing the right throws. And while neither team lit up the scoreboard at the end of the day, it looked like Mac Jones is actually the future for this New England Patriots offense. That was kind of the big thing that I kind of took away from it. I think that if this matchup happens again, of course, the next time this could possibly happen would be in the Super Bowl, but that it will not be that close. Probably not, I don't think. But it was awesome theater, to say the least.
Yeah, I definitely think it was pretty cool to watch. I did want to double click on that for a minute and talk about, you know, what we saw. Honestly, with Mac Jones, who, you know, threw the ball exceptionally well, you know, 275 yards and a touchdown. He did have the interception there. You know, did we learn, could this be, you know, considered Mac Jones' coming out party? I did hear a lot, you know, watching the NBC broadcast, and, you know, what if he beats Tom Brady in this moment and yada, yada, yada? I mean, honestly, it was right there for the taking. And who's to say what happens if, you know, the guy makes the kick there and, you know, who knows what happens, you know, if Tom Brady has to come back the other direction. But ultimately, I thought this was a really good game for the New England Patriots. I thought defensively they were able to frustrate Tom Brady a lot. They kind of knew where he wanted to go. I said this, I think it was on last Wednesday's show, you know, if anybody knows where to put Tom Brady in positions to be uncomfortable and to not play well, it is Bill Belichick, and, you know, that came out to play here. Much to my chagrin, because I needed Tom Brady to go off for me to win a fantasy football game, and he did not. So it is what it is. The last game I want to get into, you know, we got about 10 minutes left here. So the last game I want to get into was, you know, yesterday's Monday Night Football game where the L.A. Chargers really flexed their muscle, so to speak, and knocked the Las Vegas Raiders from the unbeaten by a score of 20-14 at home. Obviously, this game, in my opinion, kind of literally put the Chargers on the map, so to speak, for the 2021 season. As to say, listen, I understand that you want to, you know, crown, you know, Tampa Bay and the Rams and the Arizona Cardinals, but, you know, don't forget about us, because right now we're leading the conference as opposed to the Kansas City Chiefs, team we beat in their building a week ago. So what were your thoughts watching Monday Night Football yesterday? Were you more impressed with the Chargers? Did Vegas lose it? Give me a thought there.
So the one thing I'll say about the Oakland Raiders is that I think they've played above their talent level up to this point. I don't think anybody legitimately thought that the Oakland Raiders would start out the season 3-0. They've kind of stood on their head and played exceptional football and well-coached football to get to this point. So I'm not demeaning what it is that they have accomplished thus far, but the San Diego the Los Angeles Chargers are the class of this division, and especially with some injuries going on in Denver, it definitely makes them go to becoming the favorites in that division, as they are currently now a game. And that's kind of the interesting thing. Like, we talk about people's seasons as if it's over or some teams are coming out ahead. There is one undefeated team, and this is kind of an aside, but I kind of want to get this out. There is one undefeated team currently in the NFL, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. There are two winless teams in the NFL, and that is the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Detroit Lions. Everybody else is within one game of each other. So the 1-3 teams are within two games of their leader. So every team is within two games of the leader at this point. So there's a lot of football to be played, and there's an extra game this year. So the statistics are going to kind of fall out the window. So even though it may look like teams like the Indianapolis Colts have no shot anymore, there's a significantly better shot than there was last year at this time. But beyond that, back to the actual football game, Justin Herbert looked spectacular. As he looked like he did at the end of last season, which was great. The defense was definitely giving the Raiders fits. And Josh Jacobs was back in the lineup, but was ineffective. It was, it's a good story for the Raiders, but I think that ultimately, even with their amazing start, they probably do end up being the bottom of the division, in my opinion.
So you think the Raiders will still be... You think the Raiders would be the bottom of the division and not the Denver Broncos?
No, I think that the Raiders are the bottom of the division. If Drew Lock is the quarterback for an extended period of time, then the Broncos will be the bottom of the division. This is not like a Teddy Bridgewater flex. This is just the facts of the matter.
I don't believe that for one second, sir.
Drew Lock is not an NFL. Oh, he's an NFL quarterback. He is a bottom half backup quarterback. I wouldn't even consider him even remotely a starter, let alone a reasonable backup to have on a team. So, in my opinion, if Drew Lock is starting, the Denver Broncos are losing every game that he starts. It doesn't matter if they're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Detroit Lions, it doesn't matter who they're playing. If Drew Lock is the starter, they are losing that football game.
I don't know about that, man. They play us this week, and Drew Lock is probably going to start because the boy Teddy's in the protocol. And, he may lunk box and beat us, but That's another conversation for another day, man.
I've already selected the Steelers for this game, so.
Oh, you know what? We definitely about to lose that one by 50, man. With that being said, man, for me, man, watching yesterday was kind of interesting because for so long I have looked at the Chargers as the what if team. You know, this is a team that, in my opinion, have invented ways to lose ball games, you know, whether it's a miss, you know, kick here or a fumble out of bounds there or somebody that come up with a play there and they win by one or, you know, two or possession. And I think there's something special about Justin Herbert and what he's able to do with this team. There's something special about the way this defense is flying around and make a significant play to lift their team. And honestly, for me, there's a big test this week with the L.A. Chargers, man, because I believe, if I remember correctly, I don't have the schedule in front of me. I think they played Dallas this week. No, they played them already. Who did they play this week?
Can you pull that up real quick? Left right now.
I'm drawing a blank. Let me see. Week five. They play the Browns. That's it. They play the Browns. So you got two 3-1 teams going at it. That both run the football, both play exceptional defense, and so we're going to learn a lot about the Chargers and a lot about the Browns this week as they kind of look to kind of solidify their place in the AFC. Before we go, we got about 3 minutes left. If you want to pop the top and, you know, turn the page onto week five, which one game are you looking forward to seeing in week five?
Week five, I haven't really even started looking at week five games, to be completely honest with you, but the big runs is going to come down to this week is not nearly as interesting as last week. Buffalo, Kansas City is a huge one for me. The Thursday night game has got a lot of intrigue to it. The Rams coming off a loss, going up against the Seahawks this week, which is rare for a Thursday night game. Thursday nights are usually hot garbage, but this week could definitely be a really strong game. But all the others don't feel like games that are have any particular intrigue, as opposed to last week where every game was like tough and really hard to predict and all this other stuff. So I mean, obviously the game of the week is New England versus the Houston Texans. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch this game?
So let me do this because we got a couple seconds left before we get out of here. There are three games I'm keeping an eye on, obviously, besides my own. And it's San Fran playing the Arizona Cardinals. Obviously, that Cleveland Brown and L.A. Chargers game. And then the Sunday night one, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. With that being said, James Greenwood, thanks for kicking it with your boy, man. Go on and give us a plug and close out and shut the door here in the kitchen, man.
It's always fun to talk football here in the kitchen, and I can't wait till next time. I'll probably be sneaking in for the Sunday brunch to give my picks, as I do every week. Until then, we'll check you all later. Peace.
Well, thanks for stopping by, Greenwood, man. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you today, man. Once again, y'all, thanks for letting me do this, man. It's your boy, Sirius, up in that 412 and the 703, man. It's such a pleasure to be here with you guys. Definitely check us out on sportscitychefs.com. We got everything from your blogs and your merchandise. Check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for finger foods and and poo-poo platters. With that being said, man, I got to do it like my man TP, man. Tell a friend to tell a friend. It's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know. I'm out, man.
Kaboom, Sports City chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom, so tell them.